Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show with me, Adam Bayfield, and of course, not forgetting, Tony Kerr.
Undoubtedly.
Indubitably.
Yeah, how's it going?
Not bad, Tone. Not bad at all. It's good to see you. Do you want to tell the listeners where we are?
Back on the beach.
We're back on the beach, yeah. Mate.
Well, it's just a throwback to last summer, isn't it?
The Beach Boys are back. That's what they call us, isn't it? The Beach Boys. Can we copyright that name?
It's probably available, isn't it? Yeah, down on the beach called Pickerel.
Out on Guernsey's west coast.
Yeah, I think we made the decision last year at any opportunity would record on the beach from now on.
Yeah.
It's only taken us 360-odd episodes to work this out, that it's actually quite nice recording on the beach.
Yeah.
I think from now on, really, this is us.
Well, this is very much my attitude to life is given a choice between being on the beach and not being on the beach, I choose being on the beach. So that's where we're podding from now on. Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful beach, although it has clouded over since I got here. You were about 45 minutes late, so when I arrived, it was really sunny. The tide was right up, kind of lapping almost at my feet. The tide is now miles away, and it's clouded over. But, you know, it's still beautiful. There's some boats bobbing out there.
It is very nice, yeah. That was a shame I wasn't here before, but there we go.
Well, shame it was entirely out of your control. You know, what time you arrived at. But never mind, I'm not annoyed about it at all. We've got lots to talk about today. Tony, lots of cricket to talk about. The series between England and New Zealand, there's plenty to discuss from that. And the World Test Championship final is coming up as well. In just a second, I'm going to throw over to you, Tony, because you've stepped up. You've been volunteered to give the match roundups, the kind of in-depth ball-by-ball. Well, maybe you won't go ball-by-ball like I normally do. We'll find out. But I'm doing that because I've not brought my laptop to the beach, which I did do last summer, which turned out to be foolish, still picking sand out of that. So I'm going off the phone today, just working off the notes app. I haven't got the kind of extensive notes that I usually have. It's a script, really. It's more like a script. It's very kind of tightly written. It kind of, we bat it back and forth, don't we, between our, you know, our writing staff.
Yeah, over the course of a couple of weeks, it takes shape.
Yeah, exactly. And it, you know, it has to go to your people, to be clear. Then it goes to legal. You know, there's a lot of stuff that has to be done before it's signed off. But today, I've just got a few little scribbly notes on the notes app here. So we'll say a bit more freewheeling.
Bit sort of Trumpy today. Yeah. Just kind of, you really don't know what's going to come out of your own mouth.
Well, exactly. And I have my PA write these, so I've not read them before. So be like, oh, Devin Conway, who's that? So should be interesting. But yeah, as I say, lots to discuss because England have been playing New Zealand in a two-test series to kick off the international summer in England. We've got the New Zealand kind of building into the World Test Championship final against India, which starts on Friday this week. We're recording this on Wednesday. So we're going to talk about that later. But let's start with these England tests. It didn't go very well for England, is that fair to say? Fill us in, Tone.
That's
give us your roundup.
Well, just, I suppose, to round it up, New Zealand won 1-0. Do you want any more details, or is that enough? Yeah, I mean, that's enough to go on.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, well, I'll take it from the top. I won't go into quite as much detail as Adam normally does. But yeah, New Zealand, of course, won the toss. Going back to that first morning at Lords.
Was it heads or was it tails?
Started at Lords. Can't remember. But yeah, New Zealand put themselves in, didn't they? Devin Conway, as you mentioned before in your little joke, was the star of the show, making
debut.
200 on debut. England followed that up with something, not a competitive, or you could argue they were still slightly in the game at that point. Possibly Rory Burns leading the way, another opener, 132 he made. New Zealand then sort of set up the or dangled the carrot, didn't they, with that declaration, 169-6 they declared to give England, you know, a really tasty, juicy target to aim for on that final day, which they took absolutely no notice of, and just blocked it out. Dom Sibley, 60 from 207 balls, absolute vintage knock from him. On the final day at Lord's for a drawn match, that one. And so off they went to Edgbaston in front of a decent crowd as well there. England, of course, desperate to put on a show. Burns making some runs in the first innings, 81, as England posted 303. New Zealand, though, finished with a first innings lead. The 80s were the sort of popular score, weren't they, in this test match. Conway made 82, Will Young, not the Will Young, but another Will Young, 82 he made, and Ross Taylor, 80. And,
what did Gareth Gates get? How many did he score?
I mean, it's just a terrible joke, isn't
How
it?
Many did David Smedden get?
Brookstein? He got a few, I think. Can't remember what his first name was, though. So New Zealand...
Really cracked myself up there.
New Zealand finished that with a first innings lead, which, you know, they didn't really need in the end, because England absolutely... just fell away, blitzed for 122 in their second innings. The wickets shared. I haven't really mentioned the bowlers, have I? So
no, far? I know. It's not as easy as it looks, Stone, is it? It's not as true. Easy as I make it look.
Well, I mean, you take ages to put it together. That's obviously it's paid off.
Yeah.
But yeah, wickets shared around. Bolt and Wagner with a couple each.
Wagner.
and Matt Henry, who came in, taking three in that final innings.
Yeah, he was man of the match, wasn't he? Three in each innings.
Patel as well with a couple of wickets. And yeah, obviously New Zealand knocked that off, no trouble at all. Just a couple down. So yeah, all in all, New Zealand's series.
Well, they won it 1-0, didn't they? They took the series. I complained in our preview that there was only two tests. I was annoyed that there was only two tests. It feels like it could be a five-test series. But I was saying that on the basis that these are two very well-matched teams. You know, it'd be so competitive. We need five tests. Two tests not enough to sort of establish who the best team is there. But I still would have liked five tests, but I was wrong about that. Because I think if there had been five tests, it could have easily been 4 or 5-0. It seems, you know, I don't know. What do you think? Is this fair to say? It felt like there was a bit of a gulf in class between these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty positive over the last few years about things. I think you generally, where you've been slightly more despondent, I've tried to kind of cheer you up and look on the bright side of things. Tough to remember a sort of worst 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
There will have been, of course, but for my memory wise, it's tough to remember. Just in terms of like
a more depressing.
The Ollie Robinson stuff. Mm. I mean, the first day was great of the series, but then it all from about midday it started to go south, didn't it? And all that stuff obviously was kind of very, very unfortunate.
We'll come on to that.
You know, then obviously the cricket didn't help. When you just look at where England are and the matches in front, it is pretty. It sort of feels like we're heading for a bit of a cliff. If we haven't fallen off it,
you said this to me the other day that there's got to be a very good chance now that England won't win a test series this year. They won't win any of these series.
Well, it's a good chance they might not win a test. I think the way things are going.
Well, they have won one. They won that series
from India. Now though. Sorry. From this summer.
Well, that's not impossible, is it? I mean, they haven't won a test in Australia for a very long time at this point. They've obviously lost to India, now lost this series, and very tough five tests against India coming up. I'm sure we'll do a preview close to the time, but you've got to make India favourites for that.
I mean, to be fair, we don't really need to worry about this or the India series. Just the warm-ups, obviously. So the real quiz starts in Brisbane.
Well, that's what Chris Silverwood would have you believe. I mean, just to start on New Zealand, I mean, it's just so incredibly impressive for them. For lots of reasons and lots of very impressive kind of standout individual performances. But the thing that really shone through for me was the fact that they made six changes between tests one and two. And that's probably the thing that we would have said was a weakness for New Zealand, is we'd have said, yeah, that first 11 is outstanding, but what have they got beyond that? You know, what do they have the depth of other teams, you know, obviously thinking about India, but even Australia. and others, you know, do New Zealand really have that depth? Are they kind of over-reliant on what we have in the past term, the golden generation of six, seven, eight players? But yeah, they made six changes. All right, a couple of those changes were first-choice players coming back in, like Trent Bolt. But yeah, Will Young, Matt Henry, you'd say, is probably only their fifth or sixth first-choice seamer and turned out to be man of the match. Obviously, Demo Conway coming in to make his debut in this series. There is depth there, yeah. And they've got to be so encouraged by that. Because, you know, as we said on the preview, you know, there is a question about how far is this a golden generation? You know, what's going to happen over the next few years when Taylor goes and Southee and Bolt eventually go? But I think there's every reason to think that they will continue because they're, you know, it seems like there are players lining up to take their place.
Yeah, and they just seem to be doing a lot of things right, don't they? Clearly, the results are showing that. But, you know, there seems to be a kind of there's a balance to that side. There's a plan that it's not overcomplicated. You know, obviously, Williamson didn't score many in the first test, didn't play in the second, and they've still sort of battered England, really. It is super impressive. And, you know, I think you did feel you had to give England some hope, maybe it's not the right word, but you had to give England some expectation going into the series, given that, it has been a very difficult place for visiting teams to play, and England have done very well, and there are good players. That said, you know, I think I predicted three, well, I predicted that New Zealand would win all three of their tests here. They arguably, they were well on top, obviously, in that first test.
Yeah, you're too pleased with yourself for that prediction, considering you got it wrong.
The first test.
You've mentioned it about six times on text and in person.
Yeah. And now they go into this World Test Championship final in a great place. I mean, the weather might get in their way in the end, but we'll see. But that, you know, that now, assuming India... obviously, with a slightly different build-up, with playing against themselves in a couple of games, assuming they arrive in good shape and settled enough into the conditions, and it's going to be a really exciting event, I think.
They're a great team to watch, New Zealand as well. That's the other thing. I mean, they do have some attritional players or players who play attritional cricket. You know, Ross Taylor, you know, the 80 that he scored wasn't beautiful to watch. But then they also have some more kind of dashing players in the batting. Obviously, we didn't see the best of Kane Williamson, but he's, you know, one of the best players to watch in the world, I think. And then I just love watching their bowlers. Trent Bolt is phenomenal, you know, aesthetically. And Neil Wagner, I love Wagner. I feel like he's not everyone's cup of tea, but I just love the kind of... this is a bit of a cliche, isn't it? But the sort of heart and the... just the sheer amount of effort he puts in. You can sort of see him, like, on his face. He's kind of, like, his face scrunched up as he runs in and just kind of explodes through the crease. And I love the way it's a sort of
attitude or kind of the what he exudes that you'd find really annoying in an Australian. But the fact it's a Kiwi, it's actually quite, like...
That's an excellent point.
Alluring and, like, endearing.
That is an excellent point. I'd find it incredibly annoying in an Australian, almost any other nationality. And it certainly, if I met him in real life and was playing six-a-side football against him, I would loathe it. But I love it in him on the New Zealand cricket team. And I love the way he can't believe how good he is. this happened quite a few times in the series where he'd bowl a brilliant ball that would beat the bat, and he'd just go, oh! It was like he couldn't believe his own genius. And still my favourite fan chant in cricket is Wagner, na 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 na, Neil Wagner.
Yeah, that is
so
good.
Everything about him, you know, he's got a lot to offer.
Got it all.
Yeah. Let's come back to the Test Championship final. Let's do England before we get there. What do you make
Start
of England?
Dissection.
What do you make of England after all this? I mean, yeah, you kind of said it's tough to remember a worse couple of weeks. I mean, you know, I think there have been lower moments in terms of, like, the actual result, or, you know, and lower moments in terms of how long they went on, you know, like the 2013 whitewash in Australia, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah,
things that will live longer than this.
At least it was short and sweet.
Well, short and
Not so sweet.
Short and bitter.
Yeah.
But I agree with you in terms of it being... I don't know. I still think this is a slight hyperbole or a bit of an exaggeration, but because it's not that long ago that they won six tests away from home or whatever it was. I mean, I think you can overstate how bad they are, but they are just incredibly average is how I would describe them. And although I think this is starting, they're kind of correcting this a little bit. This was my complaint for a long time that they seemed to have a much higher opinion of themselves as a team than they should have. And, you know, and I think they and certain quarters in the media were kind of talking about them as being a great test team, and they absolutely weren't. And I think that has changed a little bit. But there just doesn't seem to be much reason for optimism going into this India series or this Australia tour. And the reason why it feels so kind of depressing, so kind of hopeless, is because I think these are real systemic problems, aren't they? This is not a case of saying, you know, oh, they've just got their selection all wrong. You know, yes, we can talk about, and we have talked about, the rotation policy and whether that's the right thing to do. And there were players missing here. But actually, the players that were missing were replaced by other very good players. Like, you know, Archer wasn't there. But it's hard to say that that made a massive difference, given that they played four pace bowlers who were all arguably first choice anyway and bowled very well. The top five was England's best top five. And that was the real issue, was the batting wasn't good enough. And you think, well, these are the best five batsmen in England. And if they're not good enough, then what? It's about, you know, the county system is not producing batsmen. So this is, feels like a really long-term problem that has not only not been fixed, it's not even, you know, they've not even started to address it.
Yeah, and you've got this whole, there's a real... say undercurrent, it's not, is it? It's above the surface, and it's, you know, of former players now who are just like clearly bewildered by some of the technique on show and some of the way that England's top order are approaching things. Clearly someone like Mark Butcher obviously like didn't himself have a great track record, but that you know, clearly he's, people like that, you know, they're coming from a place of immense experience and have watched a lot of cricket as well.
Well, also, Mark Butcher would absolutely walk into this team at the moment.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And, you know, you've got Nasser, you know, you saw his impassioned plea, you know, after the New Zealand series, basically saying, just get a grip and start playing normally. Stop trying to be sort of too clever.
Stop faffing about, with weird footwork and things.
Yeah. And clearly that... You know, there's a school of thought now that is being implemented that just isn't getting results. Now, whether you know, in a year's time, all these players are like, you know, reeling off ton after ton because it, you know, things click and actually this is just groundwork for them. You know, it's tough to be sort of place any sort of faith in that or this method coming off.
Mm. I mean, I suppose. It is worth saying that Rory Byrne scored 100 and looked pretty good, and Sibley got that 80, which was, you know, perhaps a more controversial innings in terms of the tempo at which he scored it. But he did, if what he was trying to do was knuckle down and you know, shut up shop to secure the draw, then he did that very well. So, you know, there were positive moments, but, you know, Byrne's also played a terrible shot in the fourth, you know, in the second innings at Edgbaston that kind of precipitated that collapse. So, and then, like, yeah, Zach Crawley and Ollie Pope. I mean, both of them, you've got to think, have got bright England futures. I mean, they have to be at the centre of plans, don't they? Because they're clearly two of the most talented young batsmen in England. But they just looked so out of their depth against this New Zealand attack.
Yeah, this has to be an opportunity now, having seen this too, to look at it, look at things again and try and get it right. What's so unfortunate is you've got Burns, who, yeah, okay, you can't be too critical. He got runs, but he is like, it's unpleasant to watch.
yeah.
I mean, it's sort of, I don't know, it's just.
it's quite hard.
It's hard. No, it is harsh. It is hard. It's not just not good to watch. It doesn't
actively unpleasant to watch.
Yeah, it doesn't come from a place of malice. It just kind of, I don't know. You know, it's unwieldy. And I wouldn't mind, you know, you wouldn't mind that if, because it's, you know, it can't be too critical because, as you say, he's made runs in this series. and he's made runs before, and you know, you can't really, you literally can't do any more than that. It's just what's following is either Dom, well, what's kind of below that is Dom Sibley, who's also pretty unpleasant to watch, and then players that are just getting out for nothing. So it's kind of like the only runs England are making are coming in a really unpleasant way.
Well, what I would say to that though, and I, you may disagree, but I have for years been banging the drum that I wanted England to be picking some players who will bat. I wouldn't have used words unpleasant to watch, but that were going to show some application and get their heads down and defend. Because they just keep picking kind of white ball specialists like Jason Roy was opening 2 summers ago. So I'm glad that that's the approach they're taking. So I'm slightly loath to be too critical of Burns and Sibley. It's just that they are, you know, I suppose they're not producing it enough. And then lower down, they're not producing it at all.
Yeah.
And even Joe Root, who, you know, it is, and we said this at the time to just vindicate us, give ourselves a pat on the back, which, you know, obviously we never do. He scored that double 100 in India following all those runs he'd scored in Sri Lanka. And, you know, there was chat of like, well, we're witnessing greatness. I suppose he is, he's certainly a modern English great, but he's not doing it enough. Like, that was a little purple patch. And, you know, it that came off the back of quite a lean run, and he's in another lean run now. And so, you know, we don't need to talk about this, but you know, there is a question about should he be captain.
Well, yeah,
and because he obviously is the best batsman in the team by a mile, but he isn't doing it enough. You know, he's not producing the kind of consistency of a Williamson or a Smith or a Kohli, and England desperately need him to because they haven't got support for him.
Yeah, and I think what people, why Root, I mean, obviously weight of runs was one thing, but one of the things that marked him out and you know, forced him into the conversation of this sort of big four or big whatever, but what, you know, what was so nice about Root was the way he scored it, the opposite of, you know, Burns. You know, wasn't
pleasant to
very
watch.
Pleasant to watch, like achingly pleasant to watch. And just a joy, and the runs would kind of, you know, he'd come to the crease and the runs would just flow effortlessly. The runs would just flow effortlessly. I can't say it.
I thought you'd broken there. Just said it twice. Wrong both times.
And the runs would just flow freely.
Without any effort.
Free of effort. And, you know, so, and, you know, obviously he's had to deal with all this stuff with, you know, he's answering the questions about Robinson and I do think it's probably time to just to let him get on with the batting.
Well, I would have never made him captain in the first place, and I would have taken it off him a long time ago, you know, having been made captain. So yeah, that's definitely something I would do. There's still the problem of, well, who else is it? But it's such a, I just don't think the benefit of that problem being solved outweighs the downside of him. Yeah, he looks like a man under pressure with a lot of distractions and other things to think about other than just concentrating on his batting, which is obviously what England need him to do.
Yeah, I think the other you know, some of the other issues at the moment, clearly, you know, we've spoken about the rotation policy, but it's backfired here, and it's been obviously shown up by Bolt coming in,
yeah,
you know, straight in. And now whether that's the right or the wrong decision ultimately in the long term, I don't know, but you know, certainly in terms of on the pitch, and it's a great shame that the first time England fans have got back into a ground, they've not seen they've not been able to see a team with the best chance of winning. So that's a great shame. And then, you know, obviously the somewhat muddled thinking and the, you know, the stuff with Bracey coming in,
yeah,
not batting where he bats and keeping when he's, you know, he's quite a long way down the pecking order.
Yeah, well, he...
And having a very, very torrid time of it, and now it's probably, like, ruined for a little while.
I felt really sorry for him. He'll probably never play another test, so he'll end up with a test average of 2.3 or whatever it is. And he did not keep well. He did not look very confident behind the stumps at all. But I just... Yeah, I think you've got to lay the blame at the ECB's door there, or, you know, at the management's door, because he isn't the best wicketkeeper in England. Or, you know, obviously that's Ben Foulkes, so he's come in when Foulkes is injured, but he's not the second best wicketkeeper in England either, or probably in the top 10. They might say, oh, well, Foulkes got injured at the last minute. It wasn't that last minute. It happened before we recorded our preview, which I then managed
admittedly was last minute.
So it wasn't like it was the morning of the game. They could have drafted someone else in, and they certainly could have drafted someone else in for the second test, if, you know, having seen what happened in the first. So,
and that's the thing. When he was selected in the squad, he was brought in to bat, not to keep. So,
no, I thought that was very harsh on him. Yeah. He shouldn't have been put in that position. But yeah, it'd be difficult to pick him again now. And you hope it's not a kind of Simon Kerrigan situation where, as you say, this could ruin him, you know, ruin his professional career, not just his kind of England ambitions. But yeah, it was very unfortunate. Lastly, on this test series, I made this note after the first test and it feels slightly outdated now. I just wonder what your take is, because I saw after the end of the first game, Bumble, David Lloyd, tweeting that was the worst test match he'd ever watched. And, you know, obviously he's watched a lot of test cricket. And I think what he was talking about there was the fact that he was very frustrated that England didn't go for the runs on the final day and that they'd kind of robbed the paying public and the wider audience of entertainment there, and that, you know, that they almost had a responsibility or a duty to go for those runs. I'm just not convinced by that. I mean, it wasn't a great game, was it? And it was a pretty dull final day. I think that's a wild exaggeration to say it's the worst test he's ever seen, because there have been a lot of tests like that I've seen. But what do you think about the fact, you've kind of shown your hand a bit here, but what do you think about the fact that they didn't go for the runs on the final day? Should they have done that?
It is disappointing, because at the end of the day, it is, the sport is played to be an entertainment. It seems very miserly not to have to go for that decision. That said, if England then win the second test and win the series 1-0, everyone's happy.
Well, that's why I say maybe this note is outdated, because I made that thinking, well, surely they've done the sensible thing there to set themselves up for a chance to win the series in Test 2. But given that they lost the series, that does kind of render that decision.
So the flip side is they could have won that, lost the second test, 1-1, and then it's like, well, you know, we've had a kind of buccaneering victory. I guess, you know, maybe they thought that there just wasn't the confidence in the personnel, and, you know, without your Stokes and your Butler and...
Well, exactly. And you've got to remember, if we're doing what ifs, that they could have come out swinging and been bowled out for 60. And I don't think Bumble would have said, well, that's fair enough. I don't think many people would have just said, like, yeah, fair play to them, they gave it a go. I mean, maybe there'd have been an element of that. But if they'd done that, and again, if we're doing what ifs, and then the second test had been a draw or rained off or something, people would have said that was brainless. So in hindsight, it looks like the wrong decision, because they've obviously gone on to lose the second test. But at the time, I didn't think it was. And I get it, because it wasn't a very exciting final day. And, after it reached a certain point where a draw was inevitable, I definitely stopped watching. And it is a bit of a weird thing about test cricket, I suppose, that, you know, that sort of, you're pleased as a fan if you can turn off the TV. but I think given England's... you know, given the fact that England aren't very good and they're playing New Zealand, who are very good, taking the draw, I don't think they can be criticised too much for that. And they had to bat well to get it. And that's something that they haven't been very good at doing, you know, knuckling down and you know, Dom Sibley scoring 80 off 260 balls. I mean, that's not something that many England batsmen of recent vintage have been able to do or have done. So I wouldn't criticise them for that. And the other thing about it is that a lot of people have criticised that, not just David Lloyd. And one of the things that they've said is that, well, I don't understand why they didn't go for that, because this series isn't part of the World Test Championship, i.e., you know, maybe it'd be different if there were World Test Championship points on the line, but there aren't. So it's the implication being, well, this is only a bit of fun, so they may as well go for it. And this just to come back to one of my hobby horses about the World Test Championship, and we're going to go on to talk about the final in a second. One of my worries about it, one of the things that keeps me awake at night, Tane, is thinking that, you know, does the whole idea of the World Test Championship is to add some context and some meaning and to add value to Test cricket. But there is a danger that it could also accidentally devalue Test cricket, because before the World Test Championship existed, that wouldn't have been part of the conversation. The idea of, well, this doesn't really matter. But there's now a feeling that, unless it counts for the World Test Championship, it doesn't matter. And so, you know, you're kind of erasing or, yeah, you're sort of...
Nullifying
the context, undermining exactly the context that Test cricket had of its own, that each Test match matters somehow. It's almost like we've kind of... It's almost like a emperor has no clothes moment where everyone's gone, oh, yeah, this doesn't matter. But we thought it mattered before. And that's obviously the case for series that don't count towards the World Test Championship, but it could also be the case for series that do count towards the World Test Championship, but where the two teams involved have no chance of making it to the final. And that will be most series, actually. So I fear that it ends up having the reverse effect for the majority of Test cricket we see, that actually, unless there's significant championship points on the line, then this doesn't matter.
Mm. Yeah, it's tough to disagree with that. I think it's well argued.
Thanks very much. And without... And all off the notes app.
Yeah.
So,
remarkable virtuoso stuff.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Should we talk about Ollie Robinson? I don't think people need a big recap on this, because, you know, the whole world will have seen it. They've been talking about it on GB News. Obviously, suspended, or made his debut in the first test, suspended pending a review, because during that first test, some tweets of his came to light from, 2012, 2013, when he was a 18-year-old, of a racist and sexist nature. So the ECB have suspended him while they investigate. To say this is divided opinion is probably an understatement, but I don't know. What do you think about the way the ECB have handled it?
Yeah, it's all very, very unfortunate. And there's no clear cut, I don't think, reaction to this. And there's no way of, you know.
And just to be clear, by unfortunate, you don't mean like unlucky.
No, I mean like regrettable.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, clearly the timing, we'll come on to the actual sort of the content or whatever, you know, in a sec, but just in terms of for him in that moment, it is possible to feel quite sorry for him coming off, a phenomenal high of, you know, what will be, you know, would have been the career highlight.
Well, he played really well.
Yeah. To then walk off the pitch to presumably someone tapping on the shoulder saying, can we have a chat? Mm. You know, that will be very, very difficult to deal with. Clearly, the content of those tweets is very difficult and unpleasant, and you know, not it should yeah does clearly yeah.
unacceptable
yeah unacceptable in that context. I think the way it was talked about, it appears that a lot of those tweets were just sent to friends of his. He wasn't directly abusing people. Mm-hmm. They were sent to friends, so they're clearly very bad jokes and in extremely poor taste. They're not jokes that I would make or have made. They're jokes, or they're, you know, some of the tone or some of the areas of humor, if you can put it that way, quote unquote, I'll have heard in my life, of course, from people who aren't bad people, or haven't thought of bad people or have malicious intent. They're just bad, the very, very bad jokes. Mm. That's not to say, I'm not trying to say there's no, you know, there is definitely very real and very damaging kind of structural issues with racial inequality, racism, sexism, and gender inequality. There's no doubt about that. I feel like the actual nub of this, though, it was someone making very bad jokes to their friends, and the fact that in a public domain, that is slightly unfortunate. That they've then surfaced, because I think there will be lots and lots of people in the country and around the world who will make jokes like that, but not coming from a, do you know what I mean? Not coming from a bad place, coming from obviously clearly an ignorant place. And as I say, these aren't jokes that we would make.
No. I think it's important to say that not only are they, like, it's not just that we wouldn't make those jokes because we realize that that's inappropriate, it's that because we don't think those things, or it's not like we, that they're jokes that we would think of, but then think, well, better not say that. It's just that you obviously, like, it wouldn't even occur to you to make that joke because you don't think that or think it's funny.
Well, like, yeah, like, so one of the tweets was about, or was a, you know, a very unpleasant and poor taste remark about Madeleine McCann and Gary Speed. Now, I know there are people, though, that have very poor, you know, their sense of humour is like dark in that sense. And I don't know. This is, we're going to get onto a much wider issue here, but you would, I do think there's a difficulty because some people would say, well, no, nothing is out of bounds in comedy. Mm. And, you know, you would hear, you know, stand-up comedians will make jokes about, will make high-profile mainstream comedians make jokes not dissimilar to the context of those, the content of those tweets.
Yes, and it perhaps depends, you know, then it, some would say it then comes down to the context and the place and timing at which those are made, and if they're made in private with friends who kind of are in on the joke, or in on the fact that this is a joke, and, you know, don't think that you really think these things, whatever, that's different to if you're making them in public. And maybe the mistake that Ollie Robinson made was not realizing that Twitter is a public forum, and that these tweets are there forever and are still there. I mean, my take on it is that I think it is possible to simultaneously think that it's a bit, it just feels like a slight waste of everybody's time that someone's kind of trawling back through his tweets from 10 years ago, and to simultaneously think that he, by all accounts, is a changed figure, and that he may very well not think those things anymore, or wouldn't make those jokes anymore. And that's, you know, what people say, and that's part of the ECB's investigation to make sure that that is the case. And I think that's right. I think they have handled it in the right way in that sense. To simultaneously think all that, but also think that they can't, this can't, we can't stand for this. Like, it can't just be, what are we saying, that we, that they just go, okay, yeah, he's moved on, you know, he's not that guy anymore, especially given the events of the last year and the fact that the ECB are running a big anti-discrimination campaign at the moment. I mean, they had no choice but to suspend him. And so to simultaneously think all that I just said before, but also think that this was, that the content of those tweets is entirely unacceptable and there needs to be some punishment. And on this question of, like, or some sanction, I should say, on this question of, you know, that a lot of people have brought up of, like, well, he was 18. It was 9 years ago. You know, I'm not sure how much I go along with that, because you wouldn't say that about other misdemeanors or crimes or actions. You know, I can't remember if I made this analogy to you, and I'm not sure it's a perfect analogy, but if he had robbed a petrol station or robbed a shop or something when he was 18 and got away with it, and then he was playing his first test for England and someone went, hang on, I know that guy, and they, you know, went back through the CCTV or whatever and realised, oh yeah, he's the guy that robbed the petrol station, I don't think the response from people would be, well, it was 9 years ago, he was 18. You know, because obviously we understand that there is no kind of statute of limitations on that kind of crime. So I suppose the only question is, how heinous a crime do you consider this to be? And, you know, and that is difficult because it isn't as straightforward as robbing a petrol station. But it, I don't think we can just write it off as, well, you know, he was 18 then, he's 27 now. There still needs to be some consequence.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that point. I don't know. I tried to find the Twitter account that he was tweeting at, but it doesn't seem to exist. I don't know who. I presume, I'm assuming that these were mainly directed at friends. Mm. So I do think that immediately does separate this. This is not in the same. I think part of the issue is, well, you know, one part of the issue is that it's sort of being lumped in with the other racial abuse that sports people in particular, or anyone is subject to online, which is obviously, you know, complete, I'm not saying that this is acceptable and that is unacceptable, but that is a very, you know, abusing someone directly is clearly,
there must be
completely unacceptable.
A spectrum.
Yeah. Because these to me appear to be, as I say, poor taste jokes. Now, I think to a lesser, a certain extent, we are all, or a lot of people are guilty at some stage in one time or another of making jokes that aren't, that then subsequently down the line would be shown to be not acceptable or not as, you know, not as clever as the people who, you know, said them at the time might have thought, and not, and you know, there is just a culture of, there's some people want to say things that and use language that is risque, at best risque, at worst offensive and colorful for effect, or just because for whatever reason at the time they think it's big and clever, or that it's like that it gets a reaction. You know, some of the language, obviously they kind of covered the broad spectrum of stuff, didn't it? As you say, it was kind of these would be jokes that would be offensive to quite a lot of people for quite a lot of different reasons. But the, you know, I don't think, I suppose the point I'm trying to make is, like, I think an apology, clearly, you know, clearly given against the backdrop of everything that the ECB have to act, and because clearly Ollie Robinson isn't a stand-up comedian, and you know, fans of English cricket and the English public, you know, you don't expect to see the players representing your country being associated with that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, and there are also a lot of black, Asian, non-white and female cricketers who are, you know, or young people who want to be cricketers, who are going to be, if they don't act, they're being essentially, you know, it's a kick in the teeth for all of them, isn't it?
I suppose for me, what possibly, and it's probably not necessarily not quite high. Obviously, it's very high profile, but it's not necessarily high profile enough to force a change on this, but. For me, it raises question about what passes as humour if it's said it with humorous. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? You'll get Ricky Gervais would say that, you know, you could joke about anything and you should be allowed to joke about anything, and he will have said more offensive things than the content of these tweets, I think.
I suppose one of the reasons that this has caught fire so much and has been front page news in the UK is, and you know, again, I always know something's happening in cricket. Something's happening in cricket because people I know who aren't into cricket at all text me about it. But I think one of the reasons for that is because it is actually touching on some really complex societal questions around, you know, what do we do with people? How do people make amends? Because I definitely think that. Firstly, the ECB had no choice but to suspend him, but also it was the right thing to do to suspend him, because I don't think you can just say, oh, never mind, move on. You know, he should face some penalty, some punishment for this. But what is a satisfactory punishment? Are we saying that because he did, I don't think, as I just said, I don't think you can say, well, he did this when he was 18, it's 9 years ago, forget it, move on. But equally, are we saying that if you do something when you're 18, if you do something like this when you're 18, that's it, you're written off now forever? You know, what does he need to do to atone for this? But I don't know the answer to that.
But then the logical next step is, you know, should everyone's everything anyone's ever typed be cross-referenced with every imaginable slur and offense, you know, word that could be offensive to someone, and then kind of what sort of rated and reviewed and then,
just get off Twitter is what we're saying, really, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, clearly, this is not what he has been found to have done. Is in no way unique to him or just a few people. There will be hundreds of thousands, millions of people in the country, I suspect, who would be involved. I don't know. Would be kind of privy to stuff that's like.
Well, yeah, and obviously the ECB are now investigating other players for similar things. So, you know, but that's not to say that it's okay.
No, I'm not. No, definitely not saying that.
Or that they shouldn't take action. So, yeah, I mean, I suspect that, assuming that nothing else has turned up in this investigation, that he will be back or he will be available for selection for the India series. It's difficult. It's really difficult.
What's your view then on risque, bad taste jokes that are said on a comedian on a stage? Is it all right for a stand up comedian to say a joke, but not for anyone else to repeat it? Is the stage like a or is it a kind of sacred place where you've got kind of what's the expression? What's the word in Parliament? Yeah, you know what I mean though. Is that because I think
diplomatic immunity. Rightly or wrongly, there's probably some truth in that. Because I do think context matters. Context matters for these conversations in the same way that, again, rightly or wrongly, all sorts of things are discussed in philosophy seminars that at the dinner table, you know, people would be horrified by. And certainly when they're discussed on Twitter, philosophy professors get cancelled because they're talking about the ethics of killing and, you know, and very difficult things that, you know, thought experiments where you're trying to kind of isolate moral principles. So again, that's not a perfect analogy, but yeah, it, you know, context absolutely does matter. But I don't know. I mean, I read the tweets once. I can't remember all the detail of the Ollie Robinson tweets, but I'm not sure that they are on the same kind of level as like a Ricky Gervais joke. And I suppose with the comedy thing again, if a comedian says it, it's about what is the intention behind the words. If if it's Jim Davidson or something, where you feel like, or Roy Chubby Brown, where you feel like they genuinely think these things and are using those jokes to belittle and denigrate, and then that's different to if there's a kind of layer of irony, whether or not that is totally acceptable, I don't know, but that is different to Ricky Gervais doing it, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree with
not
that.
Not necessarily defending Ricky Gervais here, but...
No, yeah. I agree with that, but I do think that the context of those interactions, I think, has been missed. And I don't think anyone's really... Maybe I've got it wrong. Maybe they are all just directly abusing people. But it doesn't appear to me to be the case. It appears to be someone making poor taste comments to a friend, which in a public domain, which is, you know, we wouldn't stand in the high street from one end to the other and make comments like this, you know. So, and if we did, we'd probably expect to receive some sort of, if not official sanction from the police, someone would probably come up and punch us both. It, as you said, the context, the wider context of what's going on in the world, you know, it certainly looks very bad, yeah. And it probably is a little bit bad, I think.
We are going to pivot really hard now. it's a bit of a gear change because we're coming towards the end here, but just to talk about the World Test Championship final. By the way, as we were having that conversation, you've got your back to the car park there, Tim, but this guy kind of wandered down onto the beach, stared at us with his hands on his knees, trying to work out what we were doing. And I think possibly overheard some of our conversation about, like, you know, societal, systemic societal structural problems, and then just turned around and left. So I was like, oh, we've got a live audience. No, we don't. No. Hopefully some people are still listening out there in cyberspace. But let's talk about the World Test Championship final, which, as I mentioned, starts on Friday, the 18th of June. India flown into England to take on New Zealand at the Aegeus Bowl in Southampton. How excited are you for this, Tone? What's your feeling? We've been talking about the World Test Championship forever. We're finally at the final. How do you feel about it all now?
Oh, well, yeah, looking forward to the clash, for sure. Yeah, as you mentioned before about the potential, the pitfalls of the World Test Championship, it might all be bad, but it's thrown up a nice moment, potential, or a fun moment. So I think we've got to enjoy that. But you would surely get as much enjoyment probably as of seeing, you know, a five test series between the top two sides in the world. Although having said that, obviously India did, they did play against New Zealand not that long ago.
In a way, there's something quite, like, to completely go against what I always say, in a way, there's something quite nice about the fact that this is a one-off, because it is, like, it feels very, you know, it's all on the line, winner take all. But then Test cricket doesn't quite work like that, because it's not winner take all, because you can have a draw. And also the weather forecast doesn't fill me with optimism that this won't be a draw, because there's a lot of rain around over the next few days. But I am excited about it. I've been pretty negative about the World Test Championship, I think it's fair to say. But now we're here, I can't help but be excited about the prospect of seeing that, you know, what are quite clearly the two best teams in the world facing off, especially because they're going to be facing off in neutral conditions. And we never see that. And in a way, I don't know whether that's actually the thing I'm excited about more than I am about the Test Championship mace or whatever it is that's on the line, because yeah, we do just never see that. And I'd actually love to see England play Australia in India. I'd love to see South Africa play New Zealand in West Indies. Do you know what I mean? Just because it's a totally different, adds a totally different dynamic. So for example, with this, India and New Zealand, I think it's probably fair to say that India would hammer New Zealand in India and New Zealand would hammer India in New Zealand because both are incredibly strong at home. But in England, it's really difficult to call. I mean, I think New Zealand, the conditions favour New Zealand a bit, both sort of naturally, but also because there's going to be a lot of rain around, you know, the spinners might not come into it as much as they would if it was really kind of, if we weren't still in the heat wave. You know, possibly New Zealand start as favourites for that reason. But yeah, I think just these two teams playing in a neutral venue is pretty exciting.
No, I agree with that.
What I'm very adamant about is that this is, I don't think this is a full vindication of the World Test Championship. If we have a thrilling final here, people will say, oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, what a success. But I think there are big problems with it still, whatever happens this week. But I am excited. In isolation, I'm excited about this game. Who starts favourites for you?
I think New Zealand, yeah, have to, don't they? Conditions clearly crucial, but you know, India swept England aside pretty comfortably last time out. New Zealand have just dominated England in England, but by virtue of the fact that New Zealand have had a full and decent enough warm up, I think they have to start as favourites.
Kind of full throttle. Although yeah. Don't forget that you know some of their best players only played one game. Kane Williamson played one game and scored about four cumulatively, didn't he? So there's that. And also we shouldn't lose sight of how good India are. Like there could be a slight recency bias that we've just seen New Zealand and thought, wow. But actually, you know, you look at that India starting 11, you think, oh yeah, they're a very good team. And yes, I think the conditions do favour New Zealand a bit. But I also think this India side are better equipped to win in England than really any we've ever seen. And they, I think they will start the series against England as favourites, as strong favourites. So yeah, I think it is two very well-matched teams, and I find it quite difficult to call.
We'll see you on the other side.
Exactly. Well, that's going to be it, Tone. How have you found this one on the beach?
Yeah, really nice.
It's still very grey overhead, but the rain has held off. There's a fisherman out there in waders just putting in a lobster pot.
Where?
By Roos. He's on his boat.
God, you can see that.
Yeah. Come on, mate. You need to get your eyes tested. You said you went to the optician the other day.
No, I've got it booked.
Oh, you got it booked.
There's no way you could see what that guy's doing.
When I went to the optician a couple of years ago, in probably like 2018, they said, when was your last appointment? And I said, not sure. And they went, was it the last time you came here? And I said, yes. And they said, yeah, that was in 1999. And I think you had something similar when you booked your appointment the other day, didn't you?
Yeah. I think genuinely the last time I remember going to the optician, well, it wasn't even an optician. It was when the person came into school and you read like three letters. I'm like, yeah, it's good enough.
The last time you went into the optician, you skateboarded in listening to Oasis on your Walkman.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, good luck with that because, you know, I'm not an optician, but your eyes aren't your strongest asset, I would say.
Oh, yeah, to be fair.
On the basis of this, being able to see that fisherman.
Well, I just can't see anyone moving. I don't know.
Anyway, that's about it for the World Cricket Show. Should we do another one of these after the final?
Yeah, let's do it.
Talk about that. Lots of limited over stuff. England white ball teams in action soon. Loads happening this summer, and we're going to talk about it all on the beach.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We are on social media. That's all I'm going to say. Find us there and do leave a review. All right. Stay in school, everyone. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.
Drake. It happens to us all. Each day, each year, year, year. And I can smell your fear. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.